Committee of the Committee on General Government. We have at least one person off in the Pendleton area in the judiciary hearing. We have one at a press conference downtown, and Senator George is probably fighting a swollen leg again. Is that right?
I believe that's right.
Yeah. So Senator Bruce Starr should be back after their press conference. I have no idea what the press conference is about, but when he comes back, we'll have a quorum and actually intend to do some getting some stuff voted out of here. But we are going to hear, and then we will close hearings, and when we get our quorum back, we will run through the actual voting process. And with that, I want to open a hearing on Senate Bill 359. I'm going to ask Lynn Parton to come forward. I've got several people. Is there anybody that I need to take out of order because of scheduling? Carol, I'm looking at you. Okay. Let's go.
For the record, my name is Lynn Parton, and I'm here on behalf of the Governor's Office. I want to thank this committee so much for having this hearing on this bill. I have been around to your offices with my little packet showing the original bill, the proposed Dash 1 amendment, and as I said, I'm here from the Governor's Office, and it was at his request that the bill was drafted and is in front of you now. It's part of his recommended budget, and you have the appropriate pages, I-15 and I-14, from that budget describing what each of the commissions does and the idea for creating a new office to staff them. Three of them have been defunct for the last few years, and the other one has been at greatly reduced level of staffing, and so we're trying to breathe new life into what the commissions do, and I'll let them talk to you about that more specifically. I would like to introduce the members. We have three current executive directors and one former executive director from the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. We have Francisca Leyva Johnson, and from the Commission on Black Affairs, Everett Rice, who's a former executive director. Commission for Women, currently Rosalind Farrington, and the Commission on Asian Affairs is Carol Suzuki. And unless you have any questions, I will let them speak to the meat of the matter. And I will just drop to the back of the pack and let them talk about.
We may call you back. I'm not sure.
That's
whether
fine.
It was,
I'll be right here.
I wasn't sure whether it was you or somebody else that I asked to bring some numbers to.
Do you want me to talk about that? I asked
we'll save that until the end. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
I'd like the whole panel to come on up then. Okay. And you can choose what order you want to go in.
Senator Shields and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carol Suzuki, and I am chair of the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs. I'm a third-generation Japanese-American. The Commission on Asian Affairs became a statutory commission in 1995, and over the years it has faced many challenges while doing its best to establish itself as a resource for the Asian-American community and state government. Each advocacy commission is the product of years of enormous community effort and mobilization just to be before you today. As an advocacy commission for Asians in Oregon, we serve a very diverse population. The traditional Asian ethnic groups of the Chinese, Korean, Filipino, Hmong, and Vietnamese fall under our umbrella, but we also represent Middle Eastern ethnic groups such as Syrians, Iranians, and also East Indians. The most recent census data has shown that Asian Americans now make up 3.5% of Oregon's population, and while that percentage may seem small, it actually represents over 100,000 people. For some, the commission served as their first contact for assistance. Over the years, we have referred numerous people to state and federal agencies after receiving the initial contact. In the recent past, we have participated in or organized an Asian Heritage Celebration at Pioneer Courthouse Square, an Asian Home Buying Fair, a joint meeting with the OLCC with Asian business owners, held an outreach meeting in Medford and heard Asian American concerns regarding assisted living facilities, and participated in or facilitated speaking engagements to groups in classrooms to promote greater understanding of Asian cultures. Most of these activities stopped when we were forced to close our doors and offices and surplus all commission furniture and possessions. Despite the loss in office, we still remain in statute, and those of us who serve as volunteer commissioners have donated our time during that interim period, and that is at our own expense. And at no time during my service on the commission have I ever received mileage reimbursement or anything. If I needed to go to a meeting or a conference, I paid for that of my own pocket, and that has not been with state funds. During the interim, a small group continued to meet and called upon Governor Kulongoski to assist us in finding a solution that would streamline our operations but retain the integrity of the individual commissions. And so we are very pleased to be here today in support of the governor's proposal, which is outlined in Senate Bill 359. It creates an Oregon Advocacy Commission's office that would serve as an administrative agency to the four commissions. The office would provide badly needed administrative support for commissioners and allow us, the volunteer commissioners, to focus on providing the services we once provided when we had an executive director and funding. Each commission has 11 appointed members, and by passing 359, the state will receive, in essence, a 44-to-2 return on the small investment made. In the past, each commission had one executive director. In Senate Bill 359, there is only one administrator for the four commissions and one assistant in the governor's proposal. As you will hear, the creation of this new agency in place of the four separate commissions provides considerable savings. By reducing historic barriers for people from different ethnic backgrounds and women to learn about and communicate with people in state government, the advocacy commissions provide added value, increased reach to diverse sectors of the state population at a very minimal expense. We hope you agree that the advocacy commissions serve an important purpose and fulfill a need in state services. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol. I have a couple questions for you. Your commission was pretty active, doing a good bit of stuff. How would you define the difference before and after the state's shut off of money to support the commission? You've still got some volunteers meeting, but actually, how much can they do, or do you meet at all?
When we lost funding, the appointments and reappointments also stopped. To be honest, my term expired in April of 2003.
Okay.
We're now, in March of 2005. And when I was elected chair, I assumed a lot of those responsibilities. I am a state employee. I have an email address. When our doors closed, and we had laid off our executive director, it fell upon me as a volunteer to coordinate the closure of our office, physically packing it up, working with DAS to first store our furniture, and then after that we were told that the space was needed, and so we had to surplus our furniture. And so at that point it was important that we not lose the history of our commission, and so I think except for maybe a few file cabinets which house our historical records in our state storage, that is all that remains. And so I still am the primary contact. I do receive communications from groups asking for contacts within the Asian community. I still occasionally hear about discrimination that occurs in the workplace. And on my own time, when I go home from work, basically is when I deal with those. I, at home at night, return phone calls.
Okay.
So I would say that my story is probably similar to those of these other commissions in that because you can't recruit when you are completely defunded. You have no executive director to help coordinate activities. And as I said, we're all volunteers and we are from different parts of the state. I was appointed from Salem. We had members from Medford, Roseburg. And again, those are folks that are receiving no reimbursement for their mileage, and yet they're dedicated enough to show up. But to be perfectly honest, it has fallen apart in the sense that we don't have regular meetings. We communicate with each other through email, and those are just the folks that are still actively involved.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Shales and Vice Chair, members of the committee, it's an honor to be before you this afternoon to offer my testimony regarding Senate Bill 359. My name is Everett Rice, of Portland, Oregon. I'm a governor-appointed commissioner of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs. I formerly served as the executive director of the Commission on Black Affairs up until April 1st of 2003 when we were defunded. I'm here representing the chair of our commission, Johnny Lake, who was unable to be with us today. The citizens, the African-American and black citizens of the state of Oregon, tentatively support Senate Bill 359 and its provisions to establish the Oregon Advocacy Commission to provide administrative support to the Commissions on Hispanic Affairs, Commission on Black Affairs, Commission for Women, and the Commission on Asian Affairs. We, the commissioners, and those that we talk to, and it's very important for the Commission on Black Affairs to talk with the people that we serve. We tentatively support this bill, as I mentioned, and as it will give the needed administrative support and funding to the commissions, and most of all, will improve the important contacts that communities have with state agencies, with the governor's office, and the Oregon Legislative Assembly. Many of the individuals, families, and communities that I work with on a daily basis and that we represent are not able to make it to Salem to let you know their thoughts on the important and vital issues that we all have to make decisions, that you have to make decisions on as lawmakers. The commissions offer those communities an excellent personal way to get their thoughts to you and the elected senators and representatives of Oregon. The state of Oregon is at a distinct disadvantage in not having ethnic and racial commissions in funded operation. The opinions of racial and ethnic minorities in Oregon need to be heard by state officials in the executive and the legislative branches of Oregon government, now as never before in our state's history. Census data and projections show that the state of Oregon will continue to diversify, and having a voice and a conduit for those diverse racial and ethnic communities will be a needed factor to make positive decisions and correct policy development with an eye on the future, not just right now. You may ask why we need ethnic and racial commissions in Oregon. Some comments from a recent focus group that I was privileged to be a part of says it best. One father and mother of two daughters approaching preschool age put it this way, and I'm quoting this person, "I am more familiar talking with and having my opinions heard by someone who lives in my locality and knows the issues my community and family face." A grandmother from the same locality who lives in North Portland expressed it this way, "Our community is portrayed in the media as being crime-ridden and overrun by gangs, but almost everyone who lives here are hardworking, quiet people who are not involved in any way in crime. But people outside of Portland would never know that. That's why we need a commission to tell the real story to the governor and to those who create and vote on the very laws that affect us every day. We feel that the funds spent would come back in many ways to the state, in positive ways, and would make the state more effective and provide more meaningful legislation and policy." Members of the committee, these are just but two comments from the many people that we have contacted regarding Senate Bill 359 that will establish the Oregon Advocacy Commission to support the individual commissions. It is my personal honor to represent my fellow commissioners and the members of the African-American and black community in the state of Oregon before you today. The communities we serve and we, the commissioners, feel that you lawmakers are missing vital information that will serve all Oregonians well. But you're missing this vital information by not having these commissions funded and supported. We ask that you please support Senate Bill 359 and revisions that we possibly like to talk about in the future, as we believe the funded commissions will help the state of Oregon to be more efficient and better serve all of its citizens, especially those of racial and ethnic heritages. I thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee for this opportunity to speak frankly with you today. I stand ready to answer any questions that you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee would have. Thank you.
Thank you. Everett, I appreciate your sharing so honestly. I don't know how much history people know, but I went into legislature in 1993 at the same time Avell Gordley went into the legislature. And Senator, then Representative Gordley, gave me some advice. I had been approached and asked if I would serve on the Commission on Black Affairs. And since Representative Gordley and I were friends, I went over and said, is this appropriate? Should I be doing this, or shouldn't you be doing this? And that was one of my first really good educations in this legislature. She said, Frank, you're the one that needs to be in there. You know, we need more people who are from the majority community remembering to know, understand, and advocate, you know, for the minority community. And so I was on that commission for about 6 or 7 years. I always worked under an executive director. There is some overlap. Johnny Lake was on that committee back then, or that commission. You say he's chair now?
Yes.
Okay. And I developed some long-term relationships with people. I guess, again, my same question would be addressed to you as addressed to Carol. What happened to your commission when you were defunded? How did it affect your work? You know, I have a pretty good understanding. I don't know if Senator Verger has had the opportunity to look at or analyze the work of the Black Commission, but I was impressed by the work that they did when I was on that commission for 6 or 7. I think I was bumped off of it when I went from the House to the Senate. I lost my seat. Could you comment a little bit?
So, Mr. Chair, the commission still continues to operate, even though we are unfunded. We have some very dedicated people who are working as volunteers, as myself. As I said, I was the former executive director. On April 1st, when I lost my job, I was unemployed for 2 weeks, but being a former state employee in another agency, I was asked to come back to work for that agency. And similar to Carol's situation, having a state address and having my own personal address I had established for the commission when I was executive director, there's not a day goes by that I do not get emails concerning discrimination that has taken place all over the entire state of Oregon. Our chair has worked on discrimination cases and advised people in the city of Eugene.
I know he has.
And, yes,
he does a good job.
And I know I have recently tried to facilitate a meeting between a principal with a very disgruntled parent in the city of I'm sorry, I forget the name of the city, but it's a city on the coast, Middle Coast. I'll think of it here in a minute. But we've still been very active. We haven't been able to meet in a physical location, but we have met via email and via teleconferencing, and we're still very active. Mm-hmm. The issues and needs that facilitated the creation of the commissions by Governor Vic Atiyah in the beginning still exist today. Now, while we made great strides in this country, there is still discrimination that exists. There are still inequalities that exist here in the state of Oregon, even though some may not want to admit that. But there are inequalities that still exist. And we, believe me, as a commissioner on the Commission on Black Affairs, I hear about them. I'm referring people to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, to the Bureau of Labor and Industries here with the state of Oregon. So we're still very busy, and I'm very fortunate that I have some very understanding people I work with the Department of Human Services who allow me to devote a small portion of my time each day to my commission duties.
Thank you for that response.
And if I may mention, Mr. Chair, right as we lost our funding, the Commission on Black Affairs had just done an extensive survey of all state agencies in the state of Oregon as to their diversity and recruitment of diverse populations and multicultural populations here in the state of Oregon. Because we lost funding, it kind of put a damper on finishing that report. I've done a lot of that work as a private citizen, as a volunteer, and we hope to, if we are funded to issue that report to the state of Oregon, it will be dated because this was as of April of 2003. But we think that those numbers and the diversity and affirmative action and the outreach efforts of state agencies within the state of Oregon will be very important for our governor and the legislature to see where we are, where we were then, and where we are and where we can be as a state.
Even if those are dated numbers, has there been a report that was like this one in any substantive way before?
In checking, we could not find a substantive report that even came close. We got the cooperation of, I think it was 92% of all state agencies, and any agency that had over 50 persons in the agency. And they were very candid in the outreach efforts toward people of color and multicultural and diverse communities. And it's things like that, I think, that the commissions are excellent at.
Senator Verger, you may remember that I asked Safe Corporation for those kind of numbers a few weeks ago. You know, and it's very interesting that we don't get those numbers in a very timely way. There's another bill that's going to be before our committee before we end this session, and the bill itself raised some questions about another major department of state government and their employment practices. So that could be a valuable tool, even if it is dated. I just wanted to comment on that. Did you have a question?
Well, I think I maybe just for the benefit of the panel, kind of where I am, I had a short discussion with Carol prior to the hearing. You had separate commissions. They were done away with. And I think what I want to try to get my arms around is this is a solution that's come up. All of you, I'm sure, would like to go back to the maybe the way it was, or maybe you wouldn't. Maybe this is something that the solution in looking at it is going to be better than what you had working separately. So I would have a number of things, and any of you can put it into your presentation, and then we can follow up with it. But it's the kind of things that what kinds of legislation impact people that have racially and ethnically diverse backgrounds. It's not the whole spectrum. There has to be a focus on certain kinds of legislation. Also, this solution, is this going to really work for everybody? Is there enough commonality in all of these commissions that one administrator will be able to understand the differences in these? So I have lots of questions. And then if you leave advocacy, then I guess that I'm wondering, how do you offer service? For instance, Carol, you said you were third generation, I believe. Let's say I moved to Coos Bay, Oregon from Choshi, Japan. How do I know you exist? How do I share my problems with you where there's not a large population of Japanese Americans? So, and does this suffice for that? So I'm just kind of grappling. I think that what you do is wonderful. In no way take my remarks as negative. They're not intended to be. I'm just trying to see where you've been, how that worked, what kinds of legislation you actually got involved in, and now as you go in the future with this particular solution, is this something that all of you think is a good idea? So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That's you can either respond, or you can have the presentations and then respond, whichever way you want to go.
Thank you very much, Senator Shields and committee members. My name is Francisca Leva Johnson. I'm a second-generation Mexican-American. I am originally from Tucson, Arizona, but I'm a Vietnam-era vet who got out of the service at Fort Lewis, Washington, and stayed in the Northwest. I've been here since 1968. I'm here to speak. I'm the chair. I'm a volunteer as well. My term expired in April of 2004. And there is but one commissioner who has a term that has not expired out of the 11 that we have, and he expires in August of this year. So you're almost to the point that there will be no one like with the Asian Commission. The passion and dedication to our communities by the volunteers, that Everett, that Roslyn, that Carol have, is without a title, without a term, they will do the work within our communities. You asked, you know, how would someone know about us? Well, I'm sure that when they got to whatever community they ended up in Oregon, they're going to find someone that looks like them, someone who knows the state a little bit better, and they will connect with us. The statutes that create us give us enough commissioners, and they're also regional commissioners, so they're all over the state. It's a network. And when you look at the 44 that will be created by this advocacy commission, you know, it's powerful. It's powerful, the number of people that you have out there working for free on behalf of this body. With regard to how will it look now from what we've had before, we haven't had much of anything for 3 years. Roslyn with the Women's Commission is very lucky to be able to have some other funding, but you know they are also in jeopardy. We're shrink wrapped. I don't know about you, Everett. I know that's where my I can't access the history of the Hispanic Commission because it's gone away. We continue to do the work. I fortunately am here from the city of Eugene. I happen to work for the city of Eugene in the human rights program. I happen to also be the coordinator for the project coordinator for complaints that occur with against any of the protected classes in the city of Eugene. So I am dealing with racism. I am dealing with issues where people are treated differently on a daily basis. That's my job. And I'm also very involved with school districts. I did 16 years on the school board, the Fern Ridge School District. So, you know, I'm trying to give you just a real short piece on what kind of volunteers you have out there and why they're so dedicated to their communities. We have continued the work. Just because they're not commission members, and we've not been able to recruit. We just have not been able to recruit. We had people coming from NISA. We had people coming from Medford. We have people coming from many different places to be in Salem and meetings. We are a statutory group. Without having a manager, without having an executive director, and we realize where the funding crisis is, for us to come in and say we want the whole pie instead of we're looking at different options, we're willing to share. That's what's got us here today. But we are a statutory commission, and we have to follow the open meetings laws. I haven't got a clue who you advertise with in Salem when I want to pull a commission meeting together out of Eugene. My resources are out of Eugene. This is a state commission. And you know there's a process that has to be followed. We're a statutory group. I'll just talk to what the commission has focused on for the Hispanic Commission. The Oregon Progress Board's most recent report on racial and ethnic minorities declared Hispanics to most likely lag behind on important Oregon benchmarks. It states that for 2002, Hispanic Oregonians were farther behind their non-Hispanic counterparts and all of the Oregon benchmarks examined. High school and college completion, eighth grade reading and math skills, high school dropout rates, health insurance coverage, prenatal care, poverty, and home ownership. In many cases, Hispanics were further behind non-Hispanics now than they were a decade ago. Latinos represent over 9% of Oregon's population, yet only 39% of the population have the power to vote. This means that over 183,000 Hispanic Latino families, women, men, and children are excluded from the political process that empowers every community. What I have for you is a packet here that shows that in 2000 we did a youth summit, and that's been our focus, is our youth. How do we get our youth through the school system? How do we empower our children to succeed in this state? So in 2000 we held a youth summit in Eugene, Oregon, and we had 300 children coming from all over the state, and I have copies of what that youth summit was about. In 2002 we chose to do a leadership Leadership Summit, and we invited those who had gotten their GED, those who had not continued to a community college or a trade school or college. So we held a leadership training in Tillamook, I believe, in Telecom Center. And I have letters here, or the children that attended, and then we gave 10 scholarships at $1,000 apiece. We were able to fundraise to pay for the summits, and it's also to provide some scholarships to whatever community college, whatever trade school, whatever college they went to. That $1,000 went to Willamette a couple of times. It went to Portland State. It went to a couple of community colleges for these 10 kids that we were able to support. Our goal is to be able to empower our youth, and when youth are empowered, the families are empowered to be successful in this state. So I do have these packets for you. How do they access the Hispanic Commission? I'm the only one that has a website. And actually, it has my personal cell phone number on it.
Hmm.
And believe me, a lot of those minutes are not mine. As I was walking here to meet, to strategize, I got a call from a woman who's moved to California, is having problems with California, and she wondered whether the Hispanic Commission in Oregon could help her with it. That's how far-reaching it is. Like I said, I'm more busy than there because of my work. And because I also know, I have made it I have been very fortunate to meet people all over the state that I can refer on race issues or discrimination issues. I can refer the work out. But it's been a real tough 3 years. It's been a real tough 3 years. This coordinates our efforts. It's not the solution that we would like, but it's a beginning for us.
Thank you very much. And let's see. You would be Roslyn?
I am.
Go ahead, Roslyn.
Thank you, Senator Shields and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Roslyn Farrington. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Commission for Women, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of this bill and to stand in partnership and advocacy with my fellow advocacy commissions. The Commission for Women, our mission is to work for the implementation and establishment of economic, social, legal, and political equality for women, and to maintain a continuing assessment of the issues and needs confronting women in Oregon. And today I just want to highlight what's been happening with our commission over the last 2 years. Fortunately, the Commission for Women has had other funds and has been engaged in several fundraising efforts, so it's been able to continue its work during this session, during this last year since we've lost our state journal fund. My commission, unlike the others, all the positions are appointed, except we have one vacancy right now. And our commissioners come from all over the state. We have commissioners from Roseburg, from Portland, from Warrington, from Hermiston, from Shedd, from Salem, one from Tualatin, and one from Milwaukee. So the Commission for Women has been and continues to be committed into having geographic and ethnic diversity of the people who serve on the Commission for Women. And my commissioners, too, serve without reimbursement. They, you know, when the governor's getting ready to appoint somebody, I have a conversation with them and tell them the reality of the Commission for Women. And so they know it when they come in. And if they have economic hardships, then we're able to do some limited mileage reimbursement. But most of them just don't even claim it and don't even ask for it because they are committed to the work of the Commission for Women. The Commission for Women was established in 1964, and we have a long history of success. Part of the question that was asked earlier by one of the members of the committee was, what have you done around legislative issues? Well, the Commission for Women has helped pass legislation on domestic violence, on child care, on sexual harassment, on women's health, and family medical leave, and many others. And if we were funded by the state of Oregon, we'd be here today advocating for other legislation for women. But instead, we're here advocating for the continuation of our work. We also, the Commission for Women was the author of the public interest application form that the governor's office now uses for anybody who wants to serve on a board of commission. So that's part of how the Commission for Women has one piece that has really far-reaching and long-term effects here in the state of Oregon. And the Commission for Women for over since 1985, the Commission for Women has had a Women of Achievement Awards dinner, and since that time, we've honored over 50 women in Oregon who are making significant contributions, and we've honored women from all walks of life, including homemakers, politicians, astronauts, and community advocates and tradeswomen. And again, the Commission for Women, if you look at the list of honorees, they do come from all parts of the state of Oregon. And I'm just happy. The last piece I want to share is, you know, when we were preparing for today, I was researching the members of this committee. And the Commission for Women has a program called Communities in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children. And it's a domestic violence education and prevention program that's federally funded. And we've had it since 2001. And so I was looking at the members of this committee and where they're from. And I'm just proud to say that from each community that's represented on this panel, the Commission for Women has had an AmeriCorps member in each of these communities over the last 5 years, providing 1,700 hours of volunteer service, doing education. We have attorneys who do legal representations free of charge for women who are trying to escape domestic violence. And that is a federally funded program. And since we've had this program, it's brought in over $1 million in federal funding and over $300,000 in community partner money. So I believe that the Commission for Women is an example of what's right in state government. It's an example of how we have been able to take the state funding when we had it and leverage it with federal funding and community services dollars. And that's part of the reason, because we've been able to do that, that's why we've been able to continue existing without state funding for the last 2 years. So is this plan for Senate Bill 359 perfect? No. But what it does provide, which is really beautiful, is administrative support. Because if with some tweaking, with the administrative support taken on by an executive director, then the commissions are, and then whatever other support staff we can get for each individual commission, that frees that person to work with the commissions and not do the business of being a state agency. And that's what I see as the beauty of this bill, is having that administrator take on all the business of being a state agency. So whatever support we're able to raise with this bill and maybe some additional support later can really be committed to doing the reports that that you're interested in, and also being out there and supporting the services that these commissions can provide if they have adequate support. So thank you, Senator Shields, and members of the committee, and I welcome any questions you might have for me.
I remember going to one of those dinners.
Yes.
That you had. And I was pretty well connected with the leadership at that point in time. And I didn't go to the meeting knowing this was going to happen, but I got to the meeting, and it was a very fine dinner. Lots of people in attendance. And whoever your executive director was then recognized that I was a Methodist minister. Mm-hmm. So she had me take up a collection for the Women's Commission. I thought that was really creative fundraising. And I congratulate you for that kind of creativity. It was very clever of them, don't you think?
Thank you, Senator Shields.
Other questions? I really appreciate all that you've said. Good discussion. I'm going to ask you to step back because we have Senator Avell Gordley here who would like to share a few words. And if we need, we'll call you back. Yes.
I just wanted to let you know that the packet on the back part is how we track bills on the Hispanic Commission.
Oh, yes.
Affect our communities.
Senator Verger, they did answer some of your questions while you're out of the room.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
Thank you for coming, Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Avell Gordley. I represent Senate District 23 in Multnomah County, which includes wonderful neighborhoods in Northeast and Southeast Portland, the Central East Side of Portland. And I'm here to speak in support of Senate Bill 359. And want to say first that I also look forward to the day when the Oregon legislature restores and enhances the funding for all of these commissions. The commissions exist in statute to advise the legislature, to advise all of government. And speaking specifically about the legislative role, the commissions exist to advise us in our public policy making as it affects the constituencies represented by the commissions. Speaking frankly, I think one of the really outrageous things we did as legislators last session was to remove funding from these commissions, which represent constituencies who have historically been underrepresented. And even misrepresented in the government arena. And so we have in front of us at some point in time the opportunity to restore and correct what I believe we have the opportunity to correct a wrong. I think we need to remember that Oregon's racial and ethnic communities and Oregon's women include taxpayers who have not benefited equitably from public policy making in a number of arenas: education, healthcare, housing, employment practices, and the list goes on and on. One of the previous panel members referenced a document produced by the Oregon Progress Board. And, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would like to encourage you to, if you have not made yourselves familiar with the Oregon Progress Board report, the last one was issued in 2002, November of 2002. It's titled Oregon Benchmarks, a Progress Report on Oregon's Racial and Ethnic Minorities. I understand that there is an updated report currently being edited. I encourage you to get the report, the previous report, ask for the one that's currently being edited, and become more familiar with the disparities that still exist in Oregon communities around the state, disparities specifically related to Oregon's communities of color. Because the bad news is that Oregon's minorities, frankly, still lag far behind in a number of arenas. In fact, we can say that Oregon's minorities lost ground during that period of time in the 90s that has often been referred to as the boom times for a lot of other people and for a lot of other people. We know that people of color lost ground as it relates to education, as it relates to housing opportunities, as it relates to employment. Again, if you get the report from the Progress Board, it will provide you with a level of detail that every legislator needs to be aware of as we sit here in our roles of making public policy for all of Oregon. We are ineffective in our roles if we do not understand this information, if we're not reflecting on this information in our various committees, whether it's the Education Committee or Public Safety or Economic and Community Development. Um,
I think I'll just stop there. I believe I've made my point. Again, I'm here to support the bill such as it is, and to again make the point that it falls far short of what we should be supporting as Oregonians. And again, I think I would hope that we will have continued discussions within the this legislative session about how we get the commissions back on track. Again, I'm talking about a restoration of funding and enhanced funding so that they can do their job of helping us do our job more effectively. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions? Senator Verger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gordley, a lot of this will depend on the ways and means process as to whether the funding is there. And so one of the things that bothers me, though, is the structure. Do you feel that with this solution of the combination that an administrator can switch hats and adequately provide information for public policy in a way that is that would suffice?
I look at this as, you know, it's a compromise, and it's let's put the best face on what is a what was a bad decision. It's a way for the commissions to be able to do some amount of work and be able to respond to a constituency of concern that exists around the state. Again, these commissions are representing constituent taxpayers who should be able to rely on their government to respond to their concerns. And we are falling far short of our responsibility to invest in these commissions so that they can provide a quality of customer service. And I believe that what we've done in our approach, and I apologize for the timbre of my voice. I've been out walking and just barely made it back here to testify in time. Again, what we're doing falls far short of where we should be, and what we did was disrespectful. It was disrespectful to these commissions and to the volunteers and to the communities that they represent. Thank you, Ms. Callens. I think the approach in Senate Bill 359, if I, again, just speaking frankly, is very paternalistic. But it's what we have before us to work with. We, as Oregonians and as legislators representing Oregonians, need to recognize that we are becoming, we are, more diverse, becoming more diverse by the day, and we need to construct government in a way that it reaches out and serves the needs of all of our people. And that's the expectation I have, and that's the expectation I believe that many taxpayers out there around the state have, again, of their government. I hope that responds.
As part of the answer, I want to call the governor's office back up because I actually asked them for some numbers. Just stay there, Senator. I always, as I was listening to you talk, Senator Gordley, I thought back when I was on the Black Commission that they were terribly underfunded then. This is even worse underfunded. But just for the record, I wanted to compare what we used to get with what this proposes that we get to demonstrate the savings.
Right.
Again, it's compromise. It's not ideal. I can't say enough how much I agree with Senator Gordley. In fact, I think I said somewhere in a public place that I felt that the defunding that occurred was a racist act. And somebody challenged me on that, and they said, oh, that is not. We're out of money. And I turned to that person and I said, you know, whether it was racist or not, the perception is that it's racist. And sometimes perception of a certain reality is even more important than the reality itself. And that's where I was on this issue when we were defunded. And I remain in that position today. We're doing wrong, and I'd like to suggest to the commissions that as this goes to the Ways and Means process, which I'm certain it'll do, each of you needs to massage this question, but from the date of your establishment to the present time, how have things changed with regard to what Senator Gordley just talked about? She says we are more diverse. Well, we're certainly more diverse when a commission that was established in 64 or 75 or whenever was established, and we are now. Paint a picture of that diversity and the change in that diversity for Ways and Means to wrestle with. Because this budget, as much as any budget I've seen, is a moral document. Excuse me, I'm preaching again. Go ahead.
Senator Shields, that was good preaching, though. Again, for the record, my name is Lynn Parton. I'm here on behalf of the governor's office. I asked Satish the question that you posed, and what he did was answer a slightly different question, which was, what if there were four advocacy commissions as four separate entities with four separate executive directors and those expenses? And that cost...
All he did then was change it into today's dollars. Go ahead.
Senator Shields, that's not exactly what he did. I can explain further if you want what he did do, but that would be $832,155 for the 2005 to 2007 biennium. Although this is not the funding mechanism, Senate Bill 5502 is the funding mechanism. What that calls for is a general fund cost of $375,000. So you can see what a bargain this is.
Yeah, that's the figure I just wanted to compare, was the $800,000 versus the $3,000,000.
And while we're on the topic of Ways and Means, I also did want to emphasize, I know you already know this, that this is a substantive bill in a substantive committee. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and then there is the companion piece, Senate Bill 5502, which is the vehicle for the funding itself. This bill just sets up the structure. It also provides some other kinds of help. If you would like me to talk about the Dash 1 amendments at all, I don't.
Yes, is it appropriate? We can, let's just go ahead. Go ahead and comment.
Because I know they're not exactly in front of the committee, but there are other good things happening. There are other good things happening here. One of the things discussed earlier was the difficulty of trying to recruit people under these very difficult circumstances, and there have also been statutory barriers to doing that, involving having to have individual members from all of the congressional delegations. And so there are some replacements of some of those clauses to say, you know, trying to echo as much geographical diversity as possible to not make it any more difficult than it already is to try to recruit for some of these positions.
I've noted the change in director to administrator, and I've noted the change basic to the extent possible. Stuff.
Well, and there's also, if you look at the very first thing, it used to just basically say DAS is going to do this, you know, for you. And what the language says now is Director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services shall consult with the commission served by the office before appointing the administrator. There's still the accountability there in terms of somebody having responsibility, but it's a more collaborative process that's contemplated now.
Thank you for that. Are there other questions?
Mr. Chair, I would like to comment on your comment about racism. You know, let me say this. I think it takes a certain consciousness and a great deal of courage to name what happened to these commissions last session. the action that took place had the effect of upholding institutional racism. The denial of funding was the denial of voice, the denial of a voice for a constituency, and that we have to call it what it was and what it is. And so I appreciate your courage and consciousness in being willing to give full expression to what it is we're struggling with as we grow and change.
Thank you.
In Oregon.
Thank you. Are there other comments? Yes.
And for the two of you, I'm glad to have you here. The issue that I struggle with, not with these particular, you know, commissions themselves, but the issues of other minority ethnicities that are in our state that don't have a like organization or commission. And I'm in the community of folks that speak Ukrainian and Russian a lot. My wife is Ukrainian, speaks Russian. I've got a fair amount of extended family on that side that are in the Portland area and in the Willamette Valley. I mentioned to Ms. Partner when she was in my office, I was in a Hillsborough Elementary School 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, and talking with the principal, and he was telling me there was 12 languages that were spoken in that elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in any way necessarily want to slow down this particular vehicle, but just to say there's a broader minority population out there than is captured by three commissions that are mentioned in this bill.
That's right.
And the ability to assimilate, all of these multiple cultures into our Oregon fabric and our community, I think it's something that we ought to be cognizant of and recognize. And if it were completely up to me, maybe we would instead of creating silos of specific cultural or ethnic commissions, we attempted to blend together this Oregon family under a larger umbrella. That maybe is just a statement, but I would welcome a reaction or a comment from the Senator and Ms. Barton.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I really appreciate your statement. It's a very important statement. Let me respond in this way. The commissions, when I think of the Hispanic Commission, the Commission on the African American Commission, the Asian Commission, we're talking about communities that have dealt with where there is a history of discrimination, some of it codified, and where we are still wrestling, struggling to correct injustices. So that's one piece. The other thing I want to say is that government exists, I believe, to serve the needs of the people and to give and to allow people to give the fullest expression to their potential. So as the face of Oregon changes, And as newcomers are in our midst and expressing how it is they want to be represented, how it is they want their voices to be heard, how it is they want their needs to be served, we need to be paying attention to that, and we need to be addressing that. But again, I think we need to be mindful of what has been our history as a nation and what has been our history as a state. We, through our Constitution, at one point in time, denied certain rights and privileges to people of color. And as a result of those wrongs, we're still living with some of the lingering impacts. And again, it's not to diminish the needs of other people, new people coming to our state who also have their desires and dreams. But again, government has to be, I think I said it, government exists to serve the needs of all of the people.
Appreciate your response. Thank you. And a response personally, Senator Starr, I, as one who welcomed into my home a Ukrainian family for about a year when they came and went through the process of learning how to really do some communication before we either one understood a word of the other's language, I recognize the truth that you're speaking about. In fact, we went backwards in the last 3 or 4 years when we ought to have been going forward. Portland School District told me once the number of languages spoken in the school district, it was well over 100. On Saturday, I had a town hall in southeast Portland, and as I walked down the hall, amazing numbers of signs in Russian, Ukrainian, and other languages that I didn't have a clue about. So, yeah. We have a diverse society. I need to wrap this up pretty quick. We've spent all afternoon on one bill, and I got three more to go.
I just
very quickly.
Real quickly, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr had also asked me, so I just wanted to respond really quickly that after we spoke the other day, I did kind of go back and do a little research, and one of the things that was looked at was doing sort of a human rights commission, which would be a broader thing, and what we were looking at is realistically what could we pass. And in light of ballot measure 36 and some other issues, there was concern that there would be too much political pushback on some of the minorities that such a commission would hopefully serve.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you so much for coming this afternoon. Senator Gordley,
so
especially thank you for your time. I'd like to close the hearing on Senate Bill 359 and open a work session on 359. We have dash one amendments. Do you want to explain them at all? No, we just did that a minute ago.
And I'll just state for the record that we have received a no revenue impact statement, and it's going to Ways and Means, so that's why we don't have a fiscal.
Okay. Can I have a little motion here?
Are we in a work session, Mr.
Chairman? Yes.
I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 359.
Senator Starr moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 359. Is there any objection? Any discussion or objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move that the bill be sent to report to the floor and then to Ways and Means, or just sent it to
Sent to Ways and Means?
I move Senate Bill 359 as amendment to the Ways to the Committee on Ways and Means.
By prior reference.
By prior reference.
Okay.
Whatever
he did that. I mean, yeah. That's my way around this.
Yes.
Whatever he said, that's the motion. Is there any discussion? Why don't you call the roll on this one?
Aye.
Senate Bill 359 is referred. Thank you, and thank you for your time this afternoon. Now, I know we spent a lot of time on that bill. I felt it important to do so. We will not be spending that kind of time on the others. My usual rule is fly or die, and that's what I'm returning to. Senate Bill 90, we're doing a quick work session on this. It abolishes the Capital Planning Commission. I asked for some dash one amendments, and I'm going to ask Judith if she'll tell us what those did in plain English, because my brain isn't working anymore this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And for your reference, you have both the Dash 1 amendments and the hand-engrossed versions at your seat at the dais. Senate Bill 90 abolishes the Capital Planning Commission. It transfers the duties to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. It abolishes the Capital Planning Commission account and transfers monies in the account to the department for their operating fund. It declares an emergency effective June 30th, 2005. The Dash 1 amendments do six things. First, acknowledge that a special relationship exists between the City of Salem, Oregon's capital, and state government, and recognizes that state lands and buildings and the functions of state government have a significant impact on the City of Salem. Second, it replaces references to the cities of Salem and Kaiser with simply the City of Salem. Third, it restores language and substitutes DAS for the Commission with respect to the Department in establishing, adopting, or implementing a plan of development in the area that is located within the boundaries of the City of Salem, and noting that the Department shall recommend to the governing body of Salem any legislation necessary to effectuate the plan. Fourth, it deletes a requirement to inform the governing body and Salem's Planning Commission about development plans prepared by the state for the capital area. Fifth, it requires DAS to coordinate with Salem's governing body and Planning Commission and with the state on those development plans for the capital area. And finally, it directs DAS to adopt rules establishing a public review process for plans and projects and specifies the contents of those rules. We have received a no revenue impact statement, and this measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And remind me why the referral to Ways and Means?
Because due to the fact that we're abolishing an account, transferring those,
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
I'd like to move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 90.
Senator Starr moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 90. Is there any discussion? I just want to say that I think these get at the issues that we raised, which were basically that we didn't want DAS just kind of blowing off the City of Salem whenever they made decisions. Is that the shortest summary I can come up with of the concern that we had? And there's nobody from the City of Salem here to wave a hand that says that there's a problem, and I don't think there is, or they would be. Okay. Having that discussion and having had the motion that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments, is there any objection? If there is none, it's so ordered.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Move by Senate Bill 90 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator George moves, Senate Bill Starr moves, I told you my brain isn't working, moves Senate Bill 90 to,
as amended,
to Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 90 and open a hearing on Senate Bill 155. Judith, would you tell us a little bit about 155 real quick? This is where shuffling the papers faster becomes an issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 155 authorizes the Secretary of State to assess state agencies for the cost of specified programs, particularly the archivist functions and administrative rules. We have before us the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments, first of all, allows the Secretary of State to determine the methodology to be used in determining the amount of assessments to be made against each state agency. Second, it allows for the assessment to be made for the biennium beginning July 1st, 2005, and calculated on the basis of costs in the biennium ending June 30th, 2003, and finally would declare an emergency effective on passage. We have received a no revenue impact statement on the measure, and you also have at your seat of the dais the fiscal impact statement, which is indeterminate. It says see the comments, and the relevant comments there would be that The measure is allowing 10 of Oregon's semi-independent agencies to deal in and with real property and personal property, including the purchasing, leasing, managing, operating, and disposing of property. It notes that debts, liabilities, and other obligations of the agency would be paid solely from the agency's revenue or pledged assets. And therefore, that's the comment from the fiscal office on this particular measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do I have a sheet of paper in front of me on this bill?
155.
Is 155? Okay. It's just for a work session.
Yeah, it's just, all right. It is just for a work session, but I think, yes.
I think Jesse's.
Yeah, Jesse's here, and I want to pull him forward.
Yeah, I have a question for.
Does he want to bring a sidekick with him? Is that what he's wanting to do?
Sure, that's acceptable.
And just remember, keep the answers short. This is fly or die session.
Absolutely.
Okay. Go ahead.
Chair, thank you. We had a conversation in my office regarding this bill, and just if you could reiterate the manner in which the Secretary of State intends to assess state agencies for the Archives Division's budget. Just in a nutshell, tell me on the record what you told me in my office, I guess.
Sure. Chair Shields, Senator Starr, for the record, Jesse Cornett. I'm the legislative liaison for Secretary of State Bill Bradbury. Amendments determine that we are going to figure out how the assessment's going to be done, and our budget folks working with our Archives Division have developed a pretty intricate mechanism where agencies will be billed essentially on holdings, how much of their stuff we actually have in archives. Previously, most assessments have been done based on FTE, and the committee didn't seem to be too fond of that, so we went and we found another measure to use, and actually have confirmed with multiple other states that they also use this measure and that it meets the approval of the federal government.
Did you tell me how many other states are doing it this way?
We have, there are 28 other states who assess the federal government for archival use. There are three states who are very similar in many fashions to Oregon, who use the measure that we're planning to use.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. I need to make a correction for the record, and thank Jesse for not pointing it out to the committee. And that is, I had the fiscal statement for Senate Bill 405 in there. So
that's cute.
That's not the fiscal statement on this measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, I don't have a fiscal statement for this bill in front of me. So,
no, we don't have one.
Okay. Are there other quick comments that you wanted to make about the bill?
Chair Shields, I don't think so. We discussed it in depth at a previous hearing, and I think we've covered all of our bases.
I'm satisfied. Senator Verger, do you have questions?
Yep.
We are in work session. We have these -1 amendments. Is that correct?
Mr.
All right.
Chair?
Yes.
I'd move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 155.
Senator Starr moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 155. Is there any discussion? Any objection? They are so ordered.
Now, we don't have a fiscal. What's the protocol, Mr. Chair, on this?
This has a due pass to the floor because there's another. Do you want to explain this, Jesse?
Sure. The funding mechanism, and this is the funding mechanism, and the funding actually doesn't change. It's actually part of our budget process where the funding actually changes. So there's not actually a fiscal attached to this.
Yeah, but we don't have a statement from our office, though.
We don't.
So I think we, by our own protocol, I think we're required to have that. Are we not, Mr. Chair, required to have a fiscal statement on a bill before we send it to the floor?
Well, I thought we didn't need it because of what you had said, and I'm not the expert around here, but if there's no funding related to this bill, and if it's all handled in your budget bill, which is before Ways and Means, my inclination would be to move it to the floor. If I'm wrong and it has to come back here, beat me up later. Go ahead. Comment?
Mr. Chair, members, certainly that is always the preference that you have the fiscals and revenue statements before you when you vote this out of committee. I will have to have the fiscal statement in hand before I drop the bill and before it does go to the floor. And so what we could do is, if it turns out that it has anything other than a no fiscal impact before going to the floor, we could ask for it to come back to committee first to consider that fiscal before we then send it again onto the floor.
It's up to you two. What do you want to do?
The just a point of order. The don't we normally just have? Are we required to kind of? Isn't that just kind of the standard by which we've operated, that you have a fiscal before you move a bill to the floor?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, certainly that's always preferable, but it is the prerogative of the committee,
okay. Depending
on how comfortable they feel, with the understanding that I would bring anything except a non-fiscal to you, and we could bring it back to committee if you so chose.
I'm comfortable with that.
I will also ask and respond to your question, Senator Starr, in that the Senate co-chair of Ways and Means came by and said, you do the bill, we got to take care of the budget down in Ways and Means, but he wanted us to move this as fast.
Very good, then.
Well, I think it's a process question, and I think that, you know, we need to just have it very clarified so that we don't start sending it to the floor and then it's part of your budget, and then it comes back to us, because then it's got to have a subsequent referral. So it's just a process question for me. I don't mind sending it out, but I think it's a good idea to send it out to the right place. And if it has a fiscal that impacts your budget, I'm not sure why it wouldn't go to Ways and Means.
You want to take a shot at that? No? You don't want to take a shot at that.
Senator Shields, I would actually ask Roy if he could speak to that at all.
No, I don't think he can. Look, if I'm wrong on this, you can beat me, but I just as soon send this to the floor, because I'm interested in a certain degree of efficiency, which we're losing.
Okay.
Very good.
And promise the committee that we'll bring it back.
And we will bring it back if there is some reason why we have to.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 155 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George
Starr.
Dang. That's twice today.
I've been called worse.
And he doesn't look a thing like Senator.
That's the truth. That's the truth. Old what's-his-name over here moves Senate Bill 155 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? So ordered. Sure. Now, we have a quick public... I need to say this real quick. The work session on 2214 is off the agenda today because of some problems, and I have received a note in the last half an hour. I didn't tell the committee about this, but I'll tell you now. Corey Streisinger is involved in meetings with SAFE and Liberty Northwest right now, and has been for the last week or 2 weeks. And they are actually meeting as we speak. They were thinking that maybe they could get in here by 4:30 and report some stuff to us, which would be fun. But they are saying that they will probably be meeting for more than an hour yet. They're doing some very interesting conversations and compromises, and we're just crossing our fingers and hope that good things happen. So that means that we've got only one bill left. I want to carry the bill, Senate Bill 155. I want to carry that one.
Okay.
We only have 4:05 left. This is a public hearing and work session. And I'm going to ask Bill Foster and Gary Peterson both to come up here and talk about it for a few minutes. Bill can go first. And I guess Judith should ask about this real quick, comment on it real quick. Did we have a hearing on this before? We did.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
But we're having public hearing a second time. I can't remember why, but we are. To go over the amendments, to give you a chance to comment on the amendments. Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Foster. I am the administrator of the Facilities Division of the Department of Administrative Services. And we had looked over the Dash 3 amendments and had previously submitted some material that did not get folded into any particular amendment. And would just like to be on the record that if this bill is to move forward, DAS would recommend that the following be added to the end of 2B, and the language that we would recommend is: the final agreement approved by the board shall be according to the terms of a loan agreement determined to be legally sufficient by the Department of Justice.
Is that similar to what we had in our hands?
Yes.
Earlier?
Yes.
I'm going to ask some other people that are in the audience to come forward and comment on that before we're done this afternoon. Okay?
Thank you,
Bill. Gary?
Chairman Shields and committee, my name is Gary Peterson. I'm the chairperson of the Oregon State Board of Geologist Examiners and a volunteer position. I wanted to lend my support to this bill. Our board, along with two other boards, sought to develop a property and looking for our long-term longevity and finances to get involved with a property shared between boards. We saw that as a beneficial move for ourselves, a cost containment move for the long term, and found that looked very viable. We found after pursuing that and getting quite a ways down the road that the interpretation of the rules was such that that wouldn't be possible for us to borrow the funds to invest in such a property.
And quick question, how much time did you waste before you found this out?
We had an initial opinion.
Was it buried in rules somewhere and hard to find out?
It was buried in rules, and yes, it did take quite a while to get that interpretation. The initial interpretations and information we had led us to believe that there wasn't a restriction on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we did get down the road with a group of boards and found later that we were stuck.
That must have been frustrating to spend a bunch of time and get nowhere.
And money, yeah.
Spend some money, too.
Yes. So that was a frustrating experience. We feel that, as a semi-independent board, that the liability is there. We think that the constraint of the lenders will be strong on assuring that we're fiscally sound and able to do that. I'm in business and manage a firm and understand that and believe that that process of semi-independent boards will be held to the same standard that we are in business. And I'm just here to support it,
mm-hmm.
Answer any further questions you might have.
I kind of like your analogy. If I go out to buy a house, the mortgage company certainly looks over my finances and makes sure I can,
mm-hmm.
And you have to go through that too.
We're going to have to go through
it's,
the same
it's
process.
It's not like you're going to sneak past anybody.
That's right. I mean, it requires two to borrow money, is my position, Chair. And I think that our job will be to convince the lender that we're sound, we're fiscally sound, and I don't see that leading to irresponsible borrowing and risk.
Okay. Thank you. Fred, I'd like to ask if you'd come up and comment on... go ahead.
Can he... Mr. Peterson, stay.
Mr. Peterson, come on back.
Well, you want me to
push them? Apparently so. Senator, I didn't follow my own procedure here. I should have asked for questions, and Senator Starr has one.
Thank you. The proposed amendments, are those products of your work with the Department of Administrative Services, or has that been undertaken with the Department of Administrative Services on their own?
I'm not aware that there's been a collaborative effort on that. Hearing the amendment just now, I didn't take exception to that. It sounds like we're going to have our contract subject to review by DOJ, which makes pretty good sense to me. I like my contracts reviewed.
Okay. Thank you.
Fred, come on up. we have a different perspective here, mm-hmm. and I think some reasoning for it. And Fred, if you've got anybody else there that you want to bring up as well, feel free.
I'm Fred Venata, appearing before you on behalf of the several of the semi-independent boards that are interested in this legislation. The reason that the Department of Justice language wasn't in that amendment was because the Department of Justice is the lawyer for the semi-independent agency. That's their source of their legal counsel. And it never occurred to us that the contracts wouldn't, as a matter of course, be reviewed. These agencies are run by smart staff people, and they are supervised by professionals who would never think about buying doing a loan without having their lawyer look at the contract. We have no objection to having the language put in there. It just was a redundancy practice.
Yeah, I thought of it as redundant myself.
We don't have the language drafted, but it's inconceivable to me that the board of professionals would sit down and pass on a contract that hadn't been looked at by their attorneys. But I have no objection to sending this package of amendments back to legislative counsel and getting that language incorporated.
Senator Verger, do you have any perspective on this?
Well, the only question that I had on this bill was that as a semi-independent agency, even though all the sideboards are up in making the loan, in other words, they have to do everything right, they've got to have the cash, they've got to have collateral, all those things, but what if they default later on as a semi-independent agency, or they disband, or in other words, it doesn't come, what happens then as far as the responsibility of the state is concerned?
Well, the language is very clear that payment is solely from revenue to the board or the pledged assets of the board. There is no liability flows anywhere else, and it's the lender's risk. Now, if it's a real property, the lender by and large doesn't have any risk. They get the real property back.
Okay.
Don't they also have mortgage insurance on top of it, probably?
Lenders have a way of protecting themselves.
They protect themselves every which way.
Yes.
I think they actually get double their money because they get their mortgage insurance on the one hand, and then they get the property, which they can turn around and sell.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Venata, is the amendments, are they the product of a work between the agencies and the Department of Administrative Services, or they work with the Department of Administrative Services with input, or can you just...
There are three sets of amendments.
I've got a -1 and a -2.
And the -1 amendments, semi-independent agencies asked for because it dealt with a problem the Treasury had about bonds and put the emergency clause on it. The -2 amendments were done by Treasury. We were consulted, and we have no objection to them. We kind of suggested the -3 amendments, trying to deal with the concerns of the Department of Administrative Services for their opportunity to review the project. One of their suggestions was the Department of Justice language, and it looked like such a redundancy that we didn't put it there. But if they feel that strongly about it, we have no objection to that language being added.
So, Mr. Chair, we'd have to adopt all three amendments. Does this bill have a fiscal? It does. I saw it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't require us to move it to Ways and Means.
We also have Laura Lockwood here from the State Treasurer's Office. Okay. You're supportive of your amendments.
Are we ready, Mr. Chair?
Huh?
Are we ready to move the bill?
I'm ready. I don't know about...
I am. I just wondered, Mr. Chair, perhaps somebody could explain to me on line 13, before making a final decision regarding the proposed loan or other agreement, the board shall conduct a public hearing. Why would that be in there?
Well, that language, as a practice, that's another redundancy because we believe the board would do that. But one of the questions that was raised by one of the legislative staff people that looked at it was, what happens if the members, the optometrists that are involved want to express opinion about whether they should buy the building or not? It just gives it's the belt and suspenders approach to a public process.
Okay, so that really would refer more to the members of the organization that would be giving information back to their board.
Well, it's a public hearing, and anybody can come.
Anybody
speak
can
to
come.
But
that's
and that's
much
also
what you
where are. The DAS recommendations would be presented at the that would okay. be presented at the public hearing, and if the DAS officials, in addition to sending a memorandum, want to appear, they'd have the opportunity to appear before the board.
Appear before them in a public hearing. All right, that's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You want to go? Are we in hearing right now?
I think so.
Well, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 405 and open a work session on Senate 405.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 405.
Senator Starr. Yes, I'm getting better. Moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 405. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Moves dash two amendments to Senate Bill 405.
Senator Starr moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 405. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Moves the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 405.
Senator Starr moves the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 405. Is there any further discussion? Any comment? Any objection? So ordered. Yeah. Senator Starr.
I move Senate Bill 405 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 405 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Carrier.
Is there a carrier that would like to volunteer?
I'll carry it.
Okay. Senator Starr will carry the bill.
Work session 359.
Okay, there needs to be, I hate to tell you this, but a very, very, very brief work session on Senate Bill 359. We've discovered something in the hall that Judith is going to tell us about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you would please look at 359, the dash one amendments, and have the original bill in front of you. I just want to note one error that the Lynn Parton, who brought the dash ones, agrees is an error in the amendment that I noticed. If you will look on the dash one amendment, line 3, it says to delete lines 14 through 18 and replace with the sub 2 right below that. Mm-hmm. If you look at the original bill, the sub 2 starts on line 15 instead of line 14.
Oh boy.
So I would ask the committee if they would like to do a conceptual amendment to change the dash 1 amendments line 3 instead to say it deletes lines 15 through 18.
Mr. Chair, do we need to suspend the rules to bring the bill back, or do we just act like it never went out? Or
Since the committee is not adjourned yet, it would still properly before us.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And he did open another work session.
I move that we conceptually amend the dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 359 in line 3, strike 4, and insert 5.
So or do you want to say
14. Maybe 14
do 14 and insert 15? Senator Starr.
Keen eyes.
Huh?
Keen eyes.
Yeah, I'm glad you caught it. It mm-hmm. would goof us up later.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
So Senator Starr conceptually amends it to... Do you want to say it exactly? Say it
thank
perfectly.
You, Mr. Chair. The motion before us is to conceptually amend Senate Bill 3, 359-1 amendments, line 3, delete 14 and insert 15.
Okay, so we're deleting the number 14 and inserting the number 15, thereby deleting only lines 15 through 18. Is there any discussion of this amendment, conceptual as it may be, very easily understood and handled down there? Any objection? So ordered. Now we have to move the bill again, right?
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 359 as amended by the dash one amendments, which were conceptually amended, to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 359 as amended to Ways and Means as, what is it, prior reference. Any objection? So ordered. And with that, I guess we are finally closed. I do want to, before I close, thank Senator Starr and apologize for replacing his name with a much, much senior member, an elderly fellow, far beyond his number of years. I don't understand what's the matter with me today. And with that, we're adjourned.